The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday, and it's not just any Wednesday. My goodness, there's so much going on between, today's the day that the impeachment trial of Donald Trump will end. Now, we knew how it was going to end before it ever started, but it doesn't make the news of it any easier to deal with, because I think you and I both held out some hope that there would be at least a handful of Republicans who would prove semi-honorable, who would put country above party, the Constitution above their ambitions. But who am I kidding? Really? The one person who has principles, go figure, is mendacious Mitt Romney. Seriously. The senators are still going through their floor speeches. Each senator afforded 10 minutes to, I guess, make their case for why they're voting the way they will coming up in an hour or so, because the voting will begin sometime around 4 p.m. Eastern. We do the live program still at 3 Eastern. Hopefully that will change soon. I believe this weekend is the actual moving date for Progressive Voices to move onto their new home with TuneIn, and hopefully then we'll get the equipment that I need to be able to do the show live at 5. But I digress. We'll get to that, hopefully, sooner rather than later. But I'm putting off the inevitable, dealing with the shit show that's going on in Washington, D.C., So anyway, the senators are all giving their speeches. Susan Collins surprised no one when she said she will vote to acquit Donald Trump on both articles of impeachment. The woman's got no principles whatsoever. You know who came out today and said he will vote to convict? Mitt Romney. Believe it or not. I'm not going to play for you his floor speech, because it's interesting the way these senators do it. They actually, you know, they speak in riddles almost. They don't just come out and say what they're going to do. But apparently Mitt Romney did a few TV interviews that were embargoed. In other words, he sits for the interviews, but the media outlets are told you need to sit on this until after Romney gives his floor speech, which he did just maybe 20 minutes ago. And then Fox News, or so-called news, released this audio of the interview that Chris Wallace did with Mitt Romney, where he made it very clear how he's going to vote.
I believe that the act he took, an effort to corrupt an election, is as destructive an attack on the oath of office and on our Constitution as I can imagine. It is a high crime and misdemeanor within the meaning of the Constitution, and that is not a decision I take lightly. It is the last decision I want to take. The personal consequences, the political consequences that fall on me as a result of that are going to be extraordinary. But I swore an oath before God, and I'm a religious person.
He's a religious person.
That I would apply impartial justice. And applying impartial justice said what the president did was grievously wrong. And I had to vote if I was going to live with my own conscience in a way that was consistent with that oath of office.
Again, do you believe that Donald Trump is unfit to serve as president and should be removed from office?
I do believe he should be removed from office. That's the vote that I
Hell
will take
yeah.
in just a short while.
Yeah, baby. So there's Mitt Romney, apparently the only one among the Republicans who's willing to stand up and actually do the right thing Go figure. So we're getting down to the end of these speeches. There's a handful left still to come. Chucky Schmucky and McTurtle McConnell. What we still don't know is what some of the so-called Democrats are going to do. Doug Jones deserves a round of applause. Yes, Doug Jones, the senator from Alabama, who is up for re-election, who said, gotta vote guilty. The man's guilty. Gonna vote guilty. So thank you, Doug Jones. Leaving in question two, count them, two so-called Democrats, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. And apparently, and I think they've both given their speeches. I don't think either one let on how they're going to vote. So we'll find out when the vote finally happens sometime in the next few hours. All right. But so that's going on. The impeachment thing finally comes to a close today. I still think it was the right thing to do, to impeach this president. And keep in mind, Donald Trump has been impeached. He is an impeached president. He is the impotus. Nothing can change that. He will go down in history as the third president in American history to be impeached. He has been impeached by the House of Representatives. Nothing can change that. What the Senate will vote on today is whether to convict and remove or acquit him. Regardless of the outcome, one thing does not change, and that is Donald Trump has been impeached. He is an impeached president. I feel a Monty Python sketch coming on, but I don't have the accent. So keep that in mind. They're not voting on whether or not to impeach him. He's been impeached. That's done. He is the impotus. But, today they're going to vote to acquit him. But it does not vindicate him. It does not exonerate him. It does not clear him. He has been impeached and he will forever be impeached. So that in, $4, he'll get you a cup of coffee. While this is going on, believe it or not, we are still waiting on more results from Monday's Iowa caucuses. What a comedy of errors. I'd call it a joke, except there's nothing funny about it. Just the incompetence of the Democratic Party of Iowa. But, I lay this all at Tom Perez's feet. He is the chair of the DNC, and he needs to go. Go. And no, I said impotus. I-M-P-O-T-U-S. Get it? It's an impeached president of the United States. Impotus, for short. And I didn't come up with that. George Conway came up with that as a hashtag, and it should go viral. Anyway, the thing with Iowa, this all boils down to this app. So we're going to go to the source. Well, not the source of the app, but the source of the reporting about this app and the genesis of it. And for that, we're going to turn to an old friend of the show, Lee Fong, who these days writes for The Intercept, who has the story, the whole deep background on Acronym, the company that became the sole investor into Shadow, which is the company that built this app, allegedly to help the Democrats tabulate all their caucus results throughout the state of Iowa. Apparently, the state of Nevada also hired Shadow, an acronym, for the same app that they've now said, don't worry, we're not going to use it. No, we paid them, but we're not going to use it. No, we're not going to use it. We'll find out also the connections between Clinton World and Mayo Pete, or maybe I should call him Mayo Cheat, and acronym/shadow/this mysterious app. Lee Fong will join us at the bottom of the hour. And I got to tell you, so last night I had read his piece at The Intercept, and I was looking for his email address to send him a note to invite him to please ask him to come on the show to talk about this story. And I got sucked into his live tweeting of the State of the Union address last night, where Lee Fong did his own bit of fact-checking. So we'll talk to Lee at the bottom of the hour. Now, but that's not all. There's more stuff going on. So we'll get to it all and what's news. But before we get to that, well, maybe a little bit of fun for this. And it's a good thing that these cold opens on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert are really fast, because by the time YouTube figures out that I'm playing a piece of video that I'm infringing on a copyright, it's over. So hopefully I won't get dinged. So anyway, with no further ado, a quickie from Stephen Colbert and the gang at The Late Show. Take it away, Jim.
It looks like we'll be getting at least some of the first results from the Iowa Democratic caucuses. A technical glitch with the app the Iowa Democratic Party used to report results has caused a massive delay and confusion and frustration in this first nominating contest.
Having trouble with your caucus app?
Uh-oh.
Well, introducing the latest technological breakthrough in voting. Paper.
Buttigieg. Buttigieg.
Don't talk to paper. Just write it down. Don't poke at it. It's not a touchscreen. It doesn't work that way.
Oh.
No need to plug it in. It's always charged.
Uh-oh.
Simply use the accompanying stylus, write down your vote, and that's it.
Nana, this is Joshy. How do you use paper?
From the people who brought you book comes paper. Also works in airplane mode.
It's The Late Show, live with Stephen.
There you go. Just a little bit of fun from the Colbert gang. Paper! Who would have thunk? Just, you know, really? We are having such a hard time counting these things because they tried to use a newfangled app. Paper pencils. What could be, what could be more difficult? All right. Well, let's get to the news, shall we? Because there's a lot going on.
I read the news today. Oh boy.
Oh, okay. I know. You want to do it live. Fuck it.
We'll do it live.
All right.
Do it live.
Okay.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
All right. Okay. All right.
Fucking thing sucks.
Thank you, Bill. Now, if it's Wednesday, our national impeachment nightmare is about to end. The Senate is slated to vote on whether to convict and remove or acquit Donald Trump. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to speak in about 15, 20 minutes or so in advance of the vote. We'll check in on them and see how it's going a little later. So Donald Trump last night delivered his third State of the Union address, and it was everything you'd expect from the guy. Lies, brags, cheap theatrics, and more lies. As for the cheap theatrics, Trump pulled out all the reality television tricks, from awarding the Presidential Medal of Freedom to hate talk, venom spewing Rush Limbaugh. And then, oh, to make it even more special, he had malaria place the medal around Rush's neck in real time. Really? And if that wasn't bad enough, Donald Trump seemed to take black and brown people and use them as props. He gave a black child a voucher for a scholarship while dissing public schools as government schools. And then there was the Ellen flavored trick of surprising a mother and her two children by bringing their no longer deployed husband and father out, bring them down for a live reunion. I was just waiting for him to say, everyone look under your chairs because you're all going home with a brand new bicycle, because Trump's too cheap to give everyone a new car. Yeah. Anyway, that's how it went. Now, we knew that Donald Trump would stoop to his signature pettiness, and that became clear as a bell when he refused to shake Nancy Pelosi's outstretched hand. And it just went downhill from there. Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the most entertaining parts of watching the thing, and it was hard to watch, I gotta tell you, but Nancy Pelosi's face, it was classic. I mean, there were times when she mouthed, "That's not true, just not true." She shook her head in disgust. There were times I saw her actually literally biting on her lip, probably to keep from screaming. So there was no single "you lie" moment. Instead, the speech was filled with them. For instance, the first moment that I like went, "Wait a minute," and I had to run the video back on the DVR, was when he said this:
"If we hadn't reversed the failed economic policies of the previous administration, the world would not now be witnessing this great economic success."
Oh, God. Okay, so you heard a lot of the what? No, ooh, you know, all the murmurs and the expressions of disbelief and shock. He didn't reverse anything Obama did. Well, when it comes to the economy, remember, when Obama took office, George W. Bush's policies had us hemorrhaging like a million jobs a month. They were hemorrhaging. And look, you know, I'm not the biggest Barack Obama fan, but give credit where credit's due. At least he stopped the hemorrhaging and turned things around. And we are now on an 11-year cycle of economic boom. So for him to say,
"If we hadn't reversed the failed economic policies of the previous administration, the world would not now be witnessing this great economic success."
Yeah. Yeah. Shut up, you creep. All right. So you knew what you were in for. It's like, okay, so that's what it's going to be. Lies, lies, and more lies. So Trump continued. He claimed he rehabbed inner cities. He said it was he who reworked trade deals. And he said he restored America's dominance on the global stage. When Trump lied about signing a bill to lower the cost of prescription drugs, the Democrats stood up and chanted H.R. 3, which is the prescription cost lowering bill that they've already passed out of the House, and it's sitting dying on Mitch McConnell's desk.
"I'm calling for bipartisan legislation that achieves the goal of dramatically lowering prescription drug prices."
Bullshit.
"Get a bill on my desk and I will sign it
it's
into
there.
Law well, immediately."
Mitch McConnell has it. So listen to the House, mostly women wearing white, who stood up and started chanting. It's coming. HR3. And he realizes what they're doing, and he tries to drown them out.
"With unyielding commitment, we are curbing the opioid epidemic."
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, he tried to drown them out. We heard them. So, yes, Trump lied about everything, including protecting coverage for pre-existing conditions.
"I've also made an ironclad pledge to American families. We will always protect patients with pre-existing conditions."
Bullshit.
Yeah. No, not really. And in fact, Daniel Dale, who is CNN's fact checker, he was working overtime fact checking the bullshit.
"That's false. I don't even usually fact check promises like this, but this one is so egregiously dishonest that I make an exception. Trump has repeatedly supported Republican bills that would significantly weaken protections for pre-existing conditions. And at present, he is supporting a Republican lawsuit that seeks to get the entirety of Obamacare tossed out by the courts. And he's presented no replacement to protect those people with pre-existing conditions if that suit succeeds.
Hello.
In addition, before he endorsed that entire lawsuit, he specifically asked the courts to declare the protections for people with pre-existing conditions unconstitutional. So, yes, this is a promise of future action, but there's no basis for it whatsoever.
None whatsoever. He's a fucking liar. Trump brag lied about his asinine border wall.
A long, tall, and very powerful wall is being built.
Yeah, no. Not really. Okay, so Daniel Dale?
So, yes, there are more than 100 miles of something, but it's important to note what those 100-plus miles are. Of 115 miles reported by the government as of the end of January, 104 of them were replacing barriers that existed before.
Okay.
10 of them reinforce existing barriers.
Uh-huh.
Just approximately 1 mile, that's what they say, approximately
1 mile
was built where no barrier existed in the first place. So that's the important context.
1 mile. He's claiming over 101 mile. And of course, the first big gust of wind that came along blew it over. I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your wall down. Yeah. So Trump lied about, record job creation. Try again, pal.
Since my election, we have created 7 million new jobs.
No.
5 million more than government experts projected during the previous administration.
Yeah, no, not really. Daniel Dale, tell us.
I'm still trying to figure out who these government experts are. I don't want to declare it false at this point because they may exist and I just haven't found them yet. The number of 7 million is just about right. It's just above 7 million if you go back to Trump's election, as he likes to. If you start at his inauguration, it's just shy of 7 million. But we don't have numbers for January 2020 yet. So that number might bring the number under him himself right up to that 7 million mark.
Oh, Daniel Dale is just trying to be overly fair. Not that Trump deserves it. So Trump continued throughout the entire speech, taking credit for Barack Obama's accomplishments, like this one.
Thanks to our bold regulatory reduction campaign, the United States has become the number one producer of oil and natural gas anywhere in the world, by far.
Well, it did happen. Yeah, but not under you, Donald Trump.
Yes, the U.S. is number one, but no, that is not because of anything Trump has done. The U.S. took the number one spot under Obama in 2012, even though Trump repeatedly accuses Obama of perpetrating what he calls a war on American energy. The U.S. has been number one natural gas production since 2009, number one in petroleum hydrocarbon production since 2013. It is crude oil production in particular in which it took the number one spot under Trump, but no, this overall number one spot is not because of him.
It's not because of him. It happened years before him under Obama. Just saying. By the way, gun control activist Fred Gutenberg, whose 14-year-old daughter Jamie was killed in the Parkland, Florida school massacre, was removed from the chamber for shouting as Trump spoke in favor of guns during the speech. By the way, a week from Friday marks the 2-year anniversary of that shooting. And I say, I stand with Fred. Good for him. Now, many observers noted that the State of the Union address was basically a repackaged version of one of Trump's re-election Nuremberg rally speeches. Just making note of that. Now, at the end of the speech, Nancy Pelosi embraced the theatrics herself and deliberately, methodically, thoroughly ripped in half Trump's speech, page by page. Talking to reporters afterwards, the speaker declared, quote, "It was the courteous thing to do considering the alternative." I'm thinking what the alternative could have been. I've got a few choice suggestions, but ripping it up works. Later, as she left the Capitol, she added, quote, "It was a manifesto of mistruths." Or a pack of lies, however you want to put it. Meanwhile, Iowa. Yes, Iowa. 2 days after the caucuses dispersed, still only 71.4% of the precincts have reported. What the hell? Bernie Sanders leads the popular vote, but Pete Buttigieg is leading in the delegates. And all I can say to that is welcome to the Democratic Party. For all the hype, it's worth noting that Joe Biden appears to have finished in fourth place. Yeah, the fourth place. Now, the White House, the candidates now have moved on to New Hampshire, where they'll debate Friday night in advance of the primary on Tuesday. Now, the White House followed through with its petty plan to exclude CNN from its annual pre-State of the Union lunch with TV network anchors. So we told you about this yesterday, and I suggested that the American press should take a page from the book of their British counterparts, who all walked out of a 10 Downing Street briefing when it wasn't open to others in the media who hadn't been invited. But no, that's not what happened here. Anchors from ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, Fox, OANN, C-SPAN, CBN, Univision, Telemundo, Sinclair, and Gray TV were all spotted coming or going from the West Wing. And the New York Times wrote a story about it. They got some leaked, inside the room information. And one of the things in the story says that Chuck Todd, or Chuck Toad as he's affectionately known, told Mr. Trump at the lunch that he was asking a question on behalf of the CNN anchor Jake Tapper. The president reportedly responded by saying that journalists from MSDNC, that's a direct quote, were also absent. And Chuck Todd didn't even push back on that. Chuck Todd reportedly hosts his own daily afternoon show. That would be MTP Daily. And I say reportedly because, well, the network is toying with the idea of moving that show to 9 a.m., because it fares so poorly in the ratings. Maybe that's why. Chuck Toad, just saying. Before we get Lee Fong on the line, there's one video I want to share with you. And it's from a company called 11 Films. And 11 Films launched this last minute effort to try to change some minds in the Senate. As you know, the senators are doing their final 10-minute justification speeches for how they're going to vote coming up in an hour or so. This group, 11 Films, produced this video, this last-minute effort to change some minds in the Senate. So let me share this with you. Again, I don't know who 11 Films is, but they put out a brilliant video. Here we go.
It is midnight in Washington. The lights are finally going out in the Capitol after a long day in the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump. You can't trust this president to do the right thing, not for one minute, not for one election, not for the sake of our country. You just can't.
Bing, bing, bum, bum.
He will not change, and you know it. History will not be kind to Donald Trump. I think we all know that. Not because it will be written by never-Trumpers, but because whenever we have departed from the values of our nation, we have come to regret it, and that regret is written all over the pages of our history. If you find that the House has proved its case and still vote to acquit, your name will be tied to his with a cord of steel and for all of history. He has betrayed our national security.
Yes, he has.
He has compromised our elections, and he will do so again. You will not change him. You cannot constrain him. Truth matters little to him. What's right matters even less. And decency matters not at all.
Remember your oath.
Donald Trump guilty.
Abuse of power.
Now do impartial justice and convict him.
Do you remember America, it says on the screen? Flashes of Kennedy and Obama. It says, we do. Hashtag impartial justice. Ah. So, that was pretty powerful. All right. Before we get to Lee Fong, let's check in for a moment what's going on the Senate floor, where unfortunately, it's Lindsey Graham who is testifying.
If you think Adam Schiff is trying to get to the truth,
or
I got
testifying,
a bridge I want to sell you.
Ah,
these people hate
so
Trump's
clever.
Guts. They rammed it through the House in a way you couldn't get a parking ticket.
What?
And they achieved their goal of impeaching him before the election.
What?
Well, the Senate's going to achieve its goal of acquitting him in February.
God, Lindsey Graham, what the hell happened to you? Really, what kind of pictures or videos does Donald Trump possess on Lindsey Graham?
Exoneration comes when President Trump gets reelected because the people of the United States are fed up with this crap.
No, we're fed up with you, with your crap, Lindsey Graham. And that's why you're going to lose. We've got a guy named Jamie Harrison who is taking on Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, and hopefully he wins.
For a short period of time that they eventually received ahead of schedule to leverage an investigation that never happened.
But he tried. So are you saying, Senator Graham, that if you go into a bank with every intention of robbing the bank, but for whatever reason your efforts are thwarted and you leave, that you're not guilty of a crime?
They didn't feel any pressure.
Bullshit.
If you're okay with Joe Biden and Hunter Biden doing what they did, it says more about you than it does anything else.
Now, what does it say about you,
the point
you creepoid?
The abuse of power article is that you've made it almost impossible now for any president to pick up the phone if all of us can assume the worst and impeach somebody based on a subjective standard.
It's not about a subjective standard.
He was talking about corruption in Ukraine with a past president.
Okay.
And the Biden's conduct in the Ukraine undercut our ability to effectively deal with corruption.
Oh, nonsense. This is such a load of bullshit. And sorry, I've had enough of Miss Lindsey for now. So I'll tell you what, let's get Li Fong on the line because I'd certainly rather speak with him. So Li Fong, I first met, God, it seems forever ago, when he was just a young reporter at Think Progress, of all places. And now, these days, Li Fong is an investigative journalist over at The Intercept, where he is doing some amazing work. So, well, we're calling Lee now.
Hello?
Ah, there he is. Hey, Lee, it's Nicole Sandler calling.
Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good.
You've got to be tired. I know you were up very, very early this morning to appear on Democracy Now! Talking about, among other things, your story dealing with this the app, the infamous app, that appears to possibly be the beginning of the end of the Iowa caucuses for good. So thank you for making time for us today. So I guess let's start with that, because it's sort of like the little app that's shaken up the entire election so far. Were you surprised, first of all, that here we are 2 days after the Iowa caucuses and we still don't have all the votes in?
Well, look, Nicole, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, you're right. There's a lot of privileges of living on the West Coast, but waking up at 3 a.m. for media interviews is not one of them. So apologies beforehand if I've lost a few IQ points just from lack of sleep. But on this issue of the Iowa caucus, you know, I've followed the Democratic Party establishment, the many failures, both technical and strategic, in terms of delivering the results that they've promised. But I don't think I could have expected this at all. It's really just incredible. It's jaw-dropping that the party has moved so slowly to release the results of the Iowa caucus. It is now almost 48 hours from the Iowa caucus date, with still only, I believe, 71% reported out, leading to a lot of confusion for voters. For people who aren't political junkies like you and I, this is very confusing. This is also the very first time the Iowa caucus has reported the first round, in addition to the qualifying delegates and the final delegates. So it's a complex system. It needs a simple explanation, and the Iowa Democratic Party seems to have done everything in its power to mess this up. And you might be right. This might be the end of the Iowa caucus as we know it. And it looks like, as you referenced just now, the cause of this, the reason that it has imploded is because, as we reported, we were one of the first to report the identity of this technology company. The Iowa Democratic Party, deployed for the very first time a new proprietary app that they contracted out from this new consulting firm. They had come up with this app only months ago. But on caucus day, the secretaries and party secretaries and caucus leaders who were designated with collecting the caucus results, they couldn't install the app. They had difficulty understanding it. They had trouble logging in. And most importantly, when they were attempting to transmit the results of the caucus to the party headquarters, there were massive failures to doing so. In some cases, I've heard that the app bugged out and even crashed in the process of it being used during the caucus. So, you know, in failures, this is not, you know, rocket science. They were asked to build a new spaceship to go to Mars. They were asked to make a secure app that could simply tally up votes.
So Li Fong, did you start looking into this company that developed this app after the breakdown in reporting, when it became apparent that Iowa was not giving us any results on Monday night? Or was this a story you were already working on?
You know, we at The Intercept, we do have a kind of an aspect here where since we report so much on surveillance and cybersecurity, you know, we had some discussions a week prior to the caucus about this new app. You know, the Wall Street Journal and I believe Politico had and the Boston Post had done some good reporting saying, well, this new app is going to be used. We had looked around and said, who is this developer? We couldn't find it. We hadn't actually identified the developer until the night of the caucus as these problems were happening. We got a number of tips. We were able to talk to people who with knowledge of the company, and we were able to identify that this was this new company launched last year called Shadow that had developed the app. You know, there's been some questions about this company. Did they have enough manpower or, you know, engineering, enough of an engineering team, enough lead time to develop this app? It looked like they began working with the Iowa Democratic Party only weeks ago, only
wow,
a few months ago, even though, you know, this caucus has happened you know, with regularity, and they knew years ago that they would need this. So that's certainly strange, and we don't know why there was this kind of blatant incompetence. In previous years, Microsoft supplied the caucus app, and as far as I know, the use of that app, but they switched to this proprietary vendor. This vendor is part of an umbrella group of new Democratic super PACs and other organizations that basically launched a few years ago, promising to raise tens of millions of dollars from Democratic donors to be the Democratic bulwark against Trump. So, you know, if you're a Democratic activist, a Democratic voter, you know, that sounds like a lot of great news. But if you look behind the curtain, so to speak, it looks like they seriously overpromised and under-delivered.
Right. So this company, you mentioned Shadow. Now, Shadow, I guess, from what I read in your piece, it's called New Details Show How Deeply Iowa Caucus App Developer Was Embedded in Democratic Establishment. That's the title of the piece up at The Intercept. I will link to it from my blog today at NicoleSandler.com, where I post today's podcast. But so Lee, the parent company, as it were, is a group called Acronym. And they announced that they were going to be the sole investor of this new startup, Shadow, who is basically who developed this app. Do I have that part right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And the people behind Acronym, one of them is David Plouffe, who was Barack Obama's, I guess, campaign strategist in 2008. And this... just so happens that David Plouffe has been showing up on MSNBC in the last couple of days as a panelist. And Chris Hayes the other night asked him about Shadow and the app, and in fact even invoked your name, Lee Fong, and David Plouffe played dumb. Here's what he said.
Reporting about the app at the center of this, which appears to have been developed by a company called Shadow that is associated with another firm called Acronym. David Plouffe, I know you've worked with Acronym. I've seen some reporting in Huffington Post, and Lee Fong and others have sort of walked through the connections. I just want to ask you if you've had anything to do with this app, if you know about it, if you have any insight into this.
I didn't know about it, so I'm helping Acronym. I'm a volunteer on their board.
And what is Acronym?
So Acronym is a digital firm that works on digital advertising. Puts out a newsletter every week about what's happening in the presidential race. My understanding, as I just texted the CEO, is Acronym's an investor in Shadow. I guess Shadow's got its own board of directors. So in my relationship with Acronym, which has been going on for a few months, I have no knowledge of Shadow.
So you weren't sitting up there the whole time being like, I actually developed
no.
this app.
No.
Okay.
I didn't know if it was Microsoft or who it was. Not to throw them under the bus,
it's
news to me. But anyway, glad you asked me.
We're gonna find out more about this.
Okay, so that was his answer, David Plouffe's answer to Chris Hayes. Was he telling the truth?
Well, look, Nicole, I can't look into David's soul and say, you know, is he telling the truth or not? But I can tell you what my reporting showed.
Okay.
And that is David Plouffe joined the board of this company. You know, this company, I think, misled the public in their statement after the Iowa caucus. They said, you know, they tried to distance themselves. They said, oh, you know, we're just an investor among many investors. But from my reporting, I found that Shadow and Acronym, they share staff. They share the same office space. They're sitting next to each other. Uh-huh. They have the same retreats. You know, they're getting the same amount, same information internally in their company. So, you know, they're all part of one big team. Is it possible that David Plouffe, the board, and had no idea about what his own company was doing? I think it's possible, but you know, it's questionable at the same time.
Gotcha. So now we're looking at the people who are behind this, and so there's the Plouffe involvement. Anyway, he's on the board of Acronym, but you say Shadow was launched by former staffers to Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign, including the main guy, a man named Namira. And then other people, Krista Davis, Honor Roe, James Hickey. So this was a lot of the Hillary Clinton gang, right? So there's that connection. And then there's also a connection to both the Buttigieg and Biden campaigns.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I should say this from the outset. We haven't seen a source code. We don't really know. We don't have any evidence that it was hacked or manipulated in any way. So I want to put that out there. Okay. We're still evaluating the information we do have about the app. So we just don't know in terms of, you know, any potential manipulation. So far, it looks like the app secure. It just kind of didn't work when it was reporting the information. But what we do know is that the Pete Buttigieg campaign spent a significant sum for software services, tech services from the same app developer that made the Iowa caucus app. In addition, there was a small contract with the Joe Biden campaign. And I think let's zoom out for a second. If this was an election vendor and we're in some kind of swing state like Wisconsin, feel comfortable with the Donald Trump campaign paying that vendor and that vendor not working with any of the other candidates, right? So I think at least in terms of the appearance of the conflict of interest, it doesn't look good that this app developer seemed to express preference or at least only worked with a few of the candidates and not the majority of them.
Right. And interesting, too, that Pete Buttigieg seemed to have access to information that nobody else had because he was going out declaring victory. Could it be that his involvement with Shadow got him more information than the other campaigns got? Or am I grasping here?
Well, I think, you know, we've got to ask the tough questions without, you know, going too far in what we don't know. That being said, the conflicts of interest are an issue. And looking at this entire debacle, I mean, it's just truly shameful. It's shameful as an American. It's shameful as someone who's interested in this process. You know, if people, I think, tongue-in-cheek were saying on Twitter that we need the United Nations to come in and monitor our elections.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not even a joke.
It's not a joke.
You could sincerely, I mean, this is absolutely shameful. This is a catastrophe that we're 2 days out. The longer we wait, though, there's less faith in the accuracy and the quality of this election process. And, you know, for the Democratic Party to say that they're the party of voting rights and to make such a big stink over the last decade to say, you know, we're the ones championing a fair process and we want access to the ballot. We want fair voter registration laws. We're the ones that want to play fair. And then when they actually host their own Democratic primary caucus, it's this complete debacle. I mean, it just looks horrible for everyone, but it looks particularly bad for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it really does. And now we find out that not only did Iowa work with Shadow for this app, but apparently Nevada, who has their caucuses coming up in a few weeks, also worked with this company, paid them about the same amount of money, ostensibly to develop an app for them to use. Now, Nevada has come out and said, we're not using the app. We're not using Shadow. We're not using Act. We're not doing any of this. Do they know how they're going to coordinate their caucus results across the state if they're not going to use this app that they've been planning on using?
That's a great question, Nicole. I don't have the answer to that. I just know what you just said, that they're reverse course. They're no longer going to use the Shadow app. You know, they've said that they have backup vendors that they're already ready to use. But, you know, as I think anyone who's observing this process, folks are losing confidence in these Democratic Party and national officials to ensure a fair and equitable process. So, you know, TBD, we will continue reporting this story, and we'll definitely cover the Nevada caucus. But, you know, we'll see. Hopefully they have a vendor that can process the report, the results in a fair and swift manner.
Or maybe they should just do what Iowa, I guess, attempted to do, which is have all the precincts call in their results. Unfortunately, this is how they've done it in past years. But because they were depending on this app, they didn't have anyone manning the phones. So it took hours and hours and hours and days and days and days. You know, what about the idea of paper and pencils and counting votes and tabulating them the old-fashioned human way?
Yeah, no, you're right. No matter how we vote, we need to have a verifiable paper trail. We need better election security across the board. You know, there's been a number of reports in recent years just showing the vulnerabilities of our ordinary election voting machines to hacking, to kind of manipulation from outside parties. This is a true crisis of democracy, especially since we know that there are many you know, there's such a focus on Russian foreign influence, and that's certainly a problem that people should be vigilant for. But if these systems are open and easily hacked, really there are adversaries everywhere, including domestic.
Yes, absolutely. So, Lee Fong, I was last night, I was like, okay, I read the piece in The Intercept. I said, I got to get Lee on. It's been too long since we've spoken.
It really has. Really glad to reconnect. You know, I think you're one of the first radio shows I did when I started reporting quite a long ago. So, very nice to talk to you.
Right, back in the old Think Progress days, and look how far you've come, and you're doing just amazing work, Lee. I'm very proud of you. And though I haven't reached out, I read you all the time. And so then last night I got sucked into your Twitter stream because you started live tweeting the State of the Union address. That was just a surreal night, wasn't it?
It really was. You know, you kind of expect some level of political theater, but it really drove home the point that Trump is in it to win it in terms of his reelection, very carefully crafting his message around co-opting some of the strongest Democratic economic issues, saying that, you know, I don't think voters should believe him, but at least saying that he'll protect Social Security and Medicare, that he'll invest in infrastructure and education, that he'll invest in broadband and lowering drug prices. He's attempting to take the lunch away from Democrats. Those are the issues they've run successfully on in many years. At the same time, projecting these lurid, violent images of immigrant crime and gruesome murders of Americans by terrorists and other kind of red meat issues to his base on abortion and guns and, of course, elevating Rush Limbaugh. So, oh. You know, that there was talk, you know, years ago that Trump wasn't serious about being president, that, you know, he would only serve a single term. No, he's raising tons of money, and he's clearly got a very focused message for this election.
Wow. It's frightening. It was it's Orwellian in pretty much every sense. It was all I could do to keep from throwing something at the TV. Was there one moment that stood out to you more than anything else in that speech? I mean, you mentioned Rush Limbaugh being given the Medal of Freedom on its own is bad enough, but inside the State of the Union address, I mean, it was just one, it's just ridiculous thing on top of another.
Well, what I find kind of interesting about this is that, you know, when Democrats get elected, Obama, Clinton, and others, there's kind of a history of distancing themselves as quickly as possible from their grassroots base, you know, the people who get them elected, the working class people, the grassroots people, the activists, the unions, and to immediately buddy up with corporate interests. You see Republicans behaving in the opposite way. Trump, you know, putting aside for a second that Rush Limbaugh has such a vile history of racism and sexism and bigotry. But, you know, Trump started his campaign on talk radio before he started campaigning in New Hampshire and Iowa in 2015 for the Republican nomination. He was just calling into every single conservative radio show because he's building out his audience and building his base. And, you know, you see this connection between Trump and the voters who sent him to the White House. I'm racking my brain for the same type of connection between Obama and his base when Republicans went after Acorn, the community organizing group that registered hundreds of thousands of poor people and got them out to vote, and Republicans went after them to destroy this organization. Democrats just immediately turned their back on them. Obama refused to mention their name. It's just a weird kind of dichotomy here, you know? And I don't know if I'm describing this well, but to see that Trump is so loyal to his grassroots supporters who are, you know, obviously super fans of Rush Limbaugh, and to see Democrats who I think some of them, I don't want to speak too broadly, I don't want to make too much of a generalization, but they see their grassroots supporters kind of with contempt.
Yeah. And again, look, the Democrats seem to have not learned anything from 2016, because all I keep hearing is, you know, their efforts at the top of the party to derail Bernie Sanders' campaign. And all I can think of is, if they pulled this same shit again, we're going to have the same outcome again. This can't end well. And yet all accounts seem to be pointing at, you know, from Tom Perez, who's the chair of the DNC, on down, they're looking at repeating what they did last time.
No, that's right. If you thought the Iowa caucus was bad and still is bad, we still don't have the results, which is just, again, jaw-dropping. Wait until we see these potential rule changes. I mean, Tom Perez, to his credit, has said he won't change the rules mid-election to harm Bernie Sanders, but there's some talk that he will. There's some rumors that the DNC is trying to rig the system to make it more difficult for someone like Bernie or Warren to win. They fear these more left-wing populist candidates.
And doesn't it seem that they already did? Because Tom Perez, it seems, unilaterally changed the rules for inclusion in the next round of debates. So they totally did away
that's a great point.
The fundraising benchmark, because we know Michael Bloomberg isn't taking donations from anyone. He's spent over $2 billion of his own money already. So they totally did away with that need. And of course, he bought himself into the polls. So now he can participate in the debates. That seems to be, you know, pretty much thumb putting on the scales right there.
And talk about timing. I don't know if the timing is a coincidence or what have you, but, you know, news dropped on a Friday afternoon last week, and coincidentally, perhaps the same day it was disclosed that Bloomberg provided an extra couple $100,000 to the DNC. Now, look, if the DNC wants to broaden the rules and keep as many people in the debate as possible, you know, as someone who's watching this process, and I think more competition of ideas is a good thing.
Yeah,
great. But they did not change the rules for many of the other candidates to make sure people like Cory Booker or Tulsi Gabbard or a lot of other folks who came very close to qualifying could be included. But now that a billionaire who's coming in and spreading the money around, literally hiring the superdelegates, providing huge campaign donations to party officials, now they changed the rules, but they didn't for the other candidates. It doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't. And it not only doesn't look good, it's, again, I've got this impending sense of doom because it's history repeating itself again. The Democratic Party, and look, and I've had arguments. Joy Reid is a prime example. She came on my show to promote her book. And when I questioned her about the Democratic Party's role in the 2016 election, and well, let's just say I got a little contentious and she hung up.
I'm going to look up that interview later today then.
There you go. I'll send you a link to it. I think you'll enjoy it. But it's stunning to me that they're poised to do the same thing all over again. And they've already made the first moves. You know, and then they bitch about the idea that some of Bernie Sanders supporters might not support the eventual nominee if it's not Sanders. All I keep thinking is Sanders is bringing a lot of people into the process who otherwise wouldn't participate. You can't realistically expect them to vote for a Joe Biden or a Pete Buttigieg or, frankly, even an Elizabeth Warren if the only reason they got involved in the first place is to help elect Bernie Sanders. And yet they're holding that out there as a, you know, showing that for some reason they're not participating in the fair process when they're doing everything they can to derail Sanders' candidacy.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. And it's just crazy. You know, my friend John Schwartz, who's also a writer at The Intercept, he calls it the iron law of institutions, that for many institutions, you know, whether you're in business or whatever, but definitely in politics, there are more incentives for the leadership of an institution to maintain their own position within that institution rather than advance that institution's goals. And I think that we see that with the Democratic Party. They fight harder to maintain their own power within the Democratic Party rather than necessarily win elections or pass progressive policy. And, you know, you're right. Like, I wasn't in Iowa. I was reporting remotely from my office, but I talked to a lot of reporters and other people on the ground who are in these caucus rooms. And, you know, there are a lot of people getting involved for the very first time. People very excited for Pete Buttigieg, for Warren, for Bernie. You know, some of these satellite caucus venues, some of the ones that were held earlier to accommodate people who had the night shift, who had to work.
Right.
These were meatpacking plant workers who had never caucused before, who were East African immigrants who work in a pork plant, and they're excited about Bernie's ideas. So, you know, these are people who have never felt drawn into the political process. They're joining, and from their perspective, people who are working, you know, bone-breaking, dangerous jobs who can't be, you know, glued to the minutiae of the media, for them to get involved in the process and then see a political party then shut them out on behalf of a billionaire who has, you know, really no material connection to these people.
Right.
It's incredible to watch.
No, it really is. And I'm hoping it's not the case, but I keep hearing this. There's a song by the Propeller Heads with Shirley Bassey called History Repeating, and it's just playing in a loop in my mind. And I hope that that's not where we go, but I can't help but think it is. And I look, you know, all from the dysfunction at the top of the party, Tom Perez, I think, needs to go immediately on down. I have this horrible fear that it's going to repeat like last time. And I guess it's up to us to create the excitement. By us, I mean the voting public, not the media, to you know, shut them down and not let them dictate how this election goes.
Well, Nicole, I'm glad you're covering this, and I'm going to continue reporting on it. And really, I'm so glad we could connect again. I hope I can join you on your show in the near future as we continue to report on the Democratic primary.
Absolutely. I hope so. Li Fang, I so appreciate your work and your time. Thank you so much. Everyone can follow you on Twitter at LHFANG, Li Fang from The Intercept. Find him over there as well. Thank you so much, Lee. It's great talking to you, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we reached the end of the hour. Now, I just pulled up the monitor. I did see Chuck Schumer already spoke, And Turtle McGirdle is giving his closing statement now. I'm not going to torture your ears with it. So, you know what? And I'd stay on late and keep going if this vote had the possibility of doing the right thing. But we know what's going to happen. So in that case, I will sign off. I will say good luck to us all. And I'll talk to you tomorrow. Howie Klein will be here as usual for a Thursday. And, I'll once again say it again. Keep your eye on the prize and don't let the bastards get you down. I know it's easier said than done. Good luck to all of us. See you tomorrow, everyone.